That's not good enough. This guy is the top scientist in the number three tobacco company in America. He's a corporate officer. You never get whistleblowers from Fortune 500 companies. This guy is the ultimate insider. He's got something to say. He wants to say it. I want it on 60 Minutes.
Doesn't matter what he wants.
Am I missing something?
What do you mean, Mike?
I mean, he's got a corporate secrecy agreement. Give me a break. I mean, this is a public health issue, like an unsafe airframe on a passenger jet or some company dumping cyanide into the East River. Issues like that. He can talk, we can air it. They've got no right to hide behind a corporate agreement.
And I don't like to be pushed around.
I'm not pushing you around. I'm asking you questions.
I'm just a commodity to you, aren't I? I could be anything, right? Anything worth putting on between commercials.
To a network, probably we're all commodities. To me, you're not a commodity. What you are is important. You go public and 30 million people hear what you gotta say, nothing, I mean nothing, will ever be the same again. You believe that?
No.
You should. Because when you're done, a judgment is gonna go down in a court of public opinion, my friend. And that's the power you have.
You believe that?
I believe that. Yes, I believe.
You believe that because you get information out to people, something happens?
Yes.
Maybe that's just what you've been telling yourself all these years to justify having a good job. Having status. And maybe for the audience, it's just voyeurism, something to do on a Sunday night. And maybe it won't change a fucking thing. And people like myself and my family are left hung out to dry, used up, broke, alone.
Are you talking to me, or did somebody else just walk in here? I never saw any of that.
Understand.
No,
exactly.
Don't evade a choice you gotta make by questioning my reputation or 60 Minutes with this cheap skepticism.
I have to put my family's welfare on the line here, my friend. And what are you putting up? You're putting up words.
Words. While you've been dicking around some fucking company golf tournaments, I've been out in the world giving my word and backing it up with action. Now, are you going to go and do this thing or not?
Well, we've done it. We're at the 100th Meridian, folks. It's just a big black line of longitude. Just got to step right on over it. It's all you got to do. I'll be here to help you. It's the 100th Meridian, baby. Whatever it is you. That's right, 100th Meridian. 100th Meridian. Here it is.
Doctor was there.
How was Sorry. That? I don't know how that happened, but anyway, thanks I'll for start, asking.
I'll start again. I wanted to make sure.
Thank
so,
you.
But that, does that mean that everything we've done up to now, it was not recorded?
I'm afraid that that's what it looks like right now.
In that case, maybe we should do it again.
Yeah.
Ole, when we come back, we'll let Jason do his, and we'll come back and we'll do a little bit of brief one for you, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, guys.
I say the whole thing for Ole. That was a fantastic story. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. I noticed there were some very weird things happening. I never knew it would accelerate to this point. It smelled like it was always there, sort of in the background, sort of a background corruption, but I wasn't really focusing on the end agendas. I noticed things like fluoride in the tap water, fluoride in the toothpaste. These things cause brain damage. I noticed that everybody that went to the doctor was sick. Everybody that didn't go was healthy. The more injections people got at the clinics, the sicker they got. The people who avoided the injections, they were the healthiest. So something seemed really wrong. So I started writing, just writing a blog. Then I moved up to writing some articles in newspapers in Canada. And then that quickly got shut down. I didn't know where it was going, but it didn't feel good, as all the newspapers I was writing for canceled all their local writers, and all the newspaper stories were the same right across the country. And basically, I used to own a chain of a small chain of fitness clubs, and I was a very high-end health coach, not your regular health coach, not your regular exercise coach. I was certified through the Czech Institute in California. This is the top institute for health in the world. And I noticed all my clients were afraid to get in shape. And I phoned the Czech Institute and I said, they're giving me thousands of dollars. These people, it's really embarrassing. They're actually afraid to get in shape. This knowledge isn't there. They won't take the knowledge. Something else is going on. And they said, well, they're in mind control. They have these things called mind viruses and they have a hard time getting over that. And I said, well, can I learn about that so I can actually earn my money instead of stealing it like I am now? So I started to use these mind control tactics on my clients. It's the only thing that worked. I got so busy. I went online, stopped working at the health chain. I went online. I got so busy there. I had to open an online school for psychological reprogramming to teach medical doctors, chiros, and members of the general public how to understand mind control, brainwashing, propaganda. And I just got back from the U.S. Senate speaking there on mind control. I spoke at the Romanian Palace of the Parliament in November of 2023, and I spoke at the EU Parliament on mind control in May of 2023. So it's been an accelerated path for me, and I just try to make very difficult topics easy to understand for the general public. That's usually why I get invited on shows and interviews or to big events, so that I can break down the mind control so everybody can sort of understand it from a layman's terms.
Your recent presentation was an Australian Zoom call. That was like therapeutic for me. You started off with 10 or 15 minutes of how ridiculous the mandates and rules were. Like, you were specifically talking about the 6-foot spacing and the sitting down, standing up at restaurants. And it's just like, these are things I just haven't had people to talk to about. In Canada, they still don't want to talk about it. When you go home and you want to talk about how ridiculous it all was, most people don't want to hear about it.
And then, yeah, it wasn't really about that it was ridiculous. It was more the angle of it was designed to be ridiculous,
right?
Because
right.
In psychological research, everybody knew it was ridiculous, but they didn't know why. They'd roll their eyes, they'd still participate, which is actually very dangerous psychologically. But I put all the contradictions down and just let people know they were all done on purpose. They weren't slips of the tongue or misunderstandings of the science. It was all meant to confuse, because confusion is the basis right. of effective mind control, according to Dr. Yuse Merlu, a man who penned Rape of the Mind, I think it was 1959. So people just need to be explained that they weren't the only ones seeing how foolish the contradictory policies were, and they need to know that it was on purpose.
I will flip back to Ole and let him do his introduction again, but I just wanted to ask you before I switch. I didn't know you and I didn't follow you when the mandate or when the corona broke. Did you speak out? Did you see it coming right from the start and start speaking out? Or did it take you a little bit before you realized? Well,
no, it was for me, it was, I already got attacked. Nothing was slowing me down. I saw it right away. And I made sure, I mean, it's all archived in my articles and my podcast. I was recording once a week, letting people know it was a psychological operation from the get-go. And this is why all our voices were silenced. Well, they will know that we're silenced very heavily, because in psychological operations, you have to isolate the person under mind control. And then once the spell is set, this is what's happening now. The spell is being set. They can take the blinders off. No one's being censored because you can't break the spell.
Okay. I've been remembering fondly recently, Ole, that you and Kim did sofa talks in 2020 you started those. I was tuning in because I was in remote locations trying to figure out what I was doing next. Those were really helpful. You were basically just two normal people talking about the way you're seeing the way things are progressing. You were in Spain at the time. Those were very, very valuable in terms of tuning in to sanity. That's how it felt to me at the time. But so let me, I'll just say to the audience, we had an intro already. We'll have to redo the intro here for Ole. We got Jason's. The Scrum then is a collaborative dialogue between experts. This is the first time we've had two experts in such compatible domains. So they have a lot of overlap and a lot in common. So I'm quite sure this conversation will just take off because they've got so much to lean, so much synergy between the two of them and their work. But I will hand it back to Ole for an introduction again, if you don't mind. And then we'll get into the question and answer with ourselves.
I don't mind at all. And I'm very, very grateful that these TOFA talks made a difference, because the thing was that I was very aware of that the operation. I actually, if we can come back to that, but I actually believe I was part of stopping the real operation where what was served to the world was just called under the name of COVID or Corona, was just a pink and fluffy version of what was actually being planned. They were going for it big, big time in October 2019, about 6 months before COVID was released. But we managed to stop the whole violent attack on the world, so that the only thing in the end that they had left was this alleged virus that came in like a fart in the afternoon. You know, like, what the hell was that? So these sofa talks were just us, my sweetheart and myself, doing like a video diary, because we had no idea, is this the end of the world? We were shut down in an apartment. We weren't allowed to leave. Spain was one of the first countries, first Italy, then Spain. Then the rest of the world started following. So we were sort of like frontline, where we on our own bodies could experience what have they got waiting for us, you know? So we started doing these video, I think it was more or less every day. We did a couple of hundred of them. And in the end, there was people from more than 60 countries tuning in, where we were sort of like a family holding each other's hands saying, this is freaking weird. You know, let's stick together. Let's help each other and like that. So very happy that you in Canada.
Oh, absolutely. Fond memories. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I used to share that with loved ones. Yeah.
No, so just to recap, my body was born in Denmark many years ago. They say I don't look so old. I don't feel old at all. I'm living complete denial when it comes to my age. So I don't give it. I mean, this vehicle is needed for a long time still. So I'm going to keep telling it that it's young and strong and healthy, which it is. But anyway, I was born in Denmark many years ago. And like I mentioned before, when I was, I grew up in a family that my father was in a high position, a former military guy, high position in Esso, owned by Statoil. And my parents were married in a strange way that I've never understood. But anyway, at the age of 8, we came from a kind of a luxury director's type of life, villa, all the nice things in the outskirts of Copenhagen. And then overnight, we moved to Sweden, like, woof. I didn't even have time to say bye-bye to my friends or anything like that. And we were told that it was just because my mother loves the nature of Sweden. So we went from a life in luxury to a house from 1783, no water, no heating, no toilet, no nothing, you know. So it was like a bucket pulling up of a well, getting water and shoveling snow in the winter to get to the toilet, these type of thing. And I was just told, this is it, because your mother loved nature. And we're talking here about mind control and stuff later on, that I didn't see that something weird was going on. To this day, it's like, come on, in your face. But anyway, it later turned out the last 7-8 years, I've become aware that my parents were living a double life, that they were in the early, the end of the Second World War, where my whole family was involved in the Danish resistance movement against the Nazi occupation. From that on, they were recruited by CIA and MI6 and were part of building the so-called Gladio Ghost Army in Denmark that went under the name of Absalon. And now, after all of these years, I'm really starting to see that my parents, and it was not only in my family, I found several other families that were very, very parallel. My parents were put together as assets, as part of this operation, not from a place of love. which we were told. I mean, we were the perfect family, but the perfect family was part of this operation. And I even believe that I might have been born into this world, not because I was wanted, but because children were needed in the 50s and 60s to be sort of accepted in this world. Anyway, so, and I also think that what my dad was doing, because I can see that we escaped to Sweden. I didn't understand it at the time. And the way was that my parents wanted out and they knew too much, they were in too deep. So they had to negotiate to get out. And I think that my father, as part of the negotiation, had to dip his hands in blood so that they had him by the balls and could control him. And so, as far as I know, he was involved with a murder of an elderly lady in Copenhagen who didn't want to bend over to this organization's demands. And after he had been part of killing her, he was let free in Sweden, where he was still used in Sweden to build up a similar network in Sweden, but really having him in control, and which turned him bitter and angry, and who can blame him? Not an easy dad to have. But anyway, I grew up, and I always had this feeling that this, when people were lying, when people were manipulating me, since I had it from when I was a baby, I had these like, bam, 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 something's wrong. I can feel it. I can smell it. There's some weird things going on here. And I think this has been a blessing for me to become what I am today, that I was from day one in a boot camp of really extreme situations that I was a victim for many years. I saw myself as a victim because I think, I don't know what kind of trauma I have not gone through. I have a whole collection of them. But when I started seeing that these traumas were actually, if I could manage to turn it around, they were incredible blessings because it gave me empathy for people in so many different situations in life. And once I went out of this super victim mode, then the power came back and I started to be able to make a difference. And I was always terrified of speaking in front of people. I mean, I was shaking, crying. It was the whole thing. And then I met my spiritual teacher, Nelini Chelaram, who is an incredible person, and a Raj Yoga teacher, which is not a religion, but a science of the mind and how we are sort of set up. And anyway, she, as part of being under her wings, she said, you have to face your fears, and it's important for you to learn to speak in front of people. And so I faced these fears, and behind this door of horror that I was fearing so much was this diamond that has now turned into be my life. So since then, I've decided, also because I've started to see on a global scale what was going on, I studied, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of alleged mass shootings, alleged terror attacks, and I kept finding the same.
I'll just say the way I would describe your expertise.
Go
is
for it.
That you're a deep expert in false flag forensics. That's what I, so much so that there's a verb now for your last name, which is somebody, if somebody deciphers a false flag as being a hoax or a partial hoax, it's called demigarding, basically. And you're also an expert in famous assassinations as well. So, but I'll hand it back to you.
No, it's partly true what you say. It's not just showing that it's a hoax. It's when I was in contact by an insider in the fall of 2014, where he said he had followed me for years. He said, you're doing great, but you're missing out on the hidden clues. I was like, what do you mean hidden clues? He said, the people that are carrying out these operations are involved in so much dark stuff, and they're terrified of the law of karma. So they put stuff, pointers towards their upcoming attacks, so that they've shown us, you know, they put it in our face, we didn't react. And if we didn't react, then the bad karma would come on our shoulders, not theirs. Because they had shown us we should have reacted, we should have done something, we didn't, boom, and it's like that. So they do it in a very, very selfish, for a very selfish reason. They put these hidden clues about upcoming attacks. And to start with, I didn't believe that at all. I thought that is just too stupid to be true. But then I started seeing, oh my God. And so in February 2015 was the first time I went out on two major shows in the US saying, this is what I've been told. I don't know, but this is what I see. And I believe that if this is true, then there might be an upcoming big, some kind of terror attack in central Copenhagen on this date. And it was the very same day we went out there. Nothing happened, but exactly 1 month later, they delayed it 1 month on the exact location at the time, all of that, boom, that happened. The first big mass shooting in Copenhagen happened. And then that was the first time I sort of started, oh my God, it seems like I'm onto something. And since then, I predicted up to 2 months before they happened or pointed out or connected 69 of these attacks on international radio. So, and it's not because I'm super clever. It's, or maybe it's because this meat suit has been fine-tuned from day one into understanding the modus operandi of these forces that... it's like a language that they're communicating with us, really subtle sometimes, really, and sometimes in like a Dan Brown series of steps, pointer, 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 like this. But so once I started seeing that that is actually going down, I devoted a big part of my life trying to teach other people to see these signs, because if we see it and we become aware that it's going to go down over there, And I normally get people on location or bring friends, families, cameras, whatever, film everyone, film everything so that they will know that we know, you know. And because the thing is, I think it's with all criminals, they can only work in the shadows. They can only work in the dark. If you aim the spotlight at them saying, we see you, if you pull that trigger, you know, and then the backlash is so much the negative impact is so much bigger on their operations if they do it. So I think that is an incredible blessing that they're doing this crap, you know, because that gives us the possibility of stopping it. And I know from the inside also that they have a very tight timeline, you know, so, and it's very connected to NATO operation and the US military, many of these operations. So for instance, if something goes down in, let's say, as an example, Syria, there were these gas massacres. They said that the president of Syria was gassing his own population. Absolute bullshit now when we see afterwards. But they were trying to push out in international media, look at this monster, look at this monster, what he's doing with gas in Syria. So right at the same time, there was an edge truck attack in Stockholm, which was also their operations, completely debunked that one. But when the police came on location in Stockholm, the police were wearing gas masks, even though it was just a normal truck that had hit into a super mall or a big mall. So the reason, so you had the headlines in the newspapers internationally, like terror attack in Sweden, police with gas mask, let's bomb Syria. Do you see? So it's like, doom, 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 doom. Mm-hmm. They work together like this. Very much mind control wise, I would say it's going to be super interesting to learn more from you of how they play ping pong with our brains and get us into yes, sir, no, sir, go for it, bomb the suckers, you know. And so the timeline is often very, very tight, meaning that if we can interfere with it at one point, then it will delay this for months sometimes. So I said, let's fuck it up for them all the time. Delay, 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 delay. And that's what I've been doing. I've been interviewed, like I said before, more than 1,200 times now. I would say, is that because I'm bullshitting, or could it be because what I'm saying is of value? And if I was not precise, why am I not criticized into or being completely ignored? But it's the exact opposite, because when I deliver, I try to be as a Mike Tyson of a truth, whereas it's not up for debate. I'm pointing out things so people can see for themselves. And once they see it, the spell is broken and go like, oh my God, just like it was for me. Oh, what? How could I not see it before? And then people really start getting, once they snap out of this fear mode and this spell is really like a spell, like you mentioned before, it's like, oh my God, I see it over there. I see it over there. So people are sending from all over the world to me saying, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that. So I have this fantastic position of being in a sort of like a helicopter view, because this is what is going on in the world now. Is not in one country. It's not in the US. It's not France. It's not England. It's not Denmark. It's all of it. There's an attack on us as humanity, and they're using nations just as pieces in a chessboard, and franchises where they're just messing around with our minds, saying that's the enemy, that's the enemy, whatever. But it's actually the enemy from within. It's a one new world order, one little, small little group of super psychos, super criminals that are trying to completely mess us over and rape, plunder, mass murder.
Well, even despite my knowing the background of your work, you still switched a light on for me on the weekend when you mentioned Moscow, Idaho, as a precursor to the Moscow incident recently.
Sometimes I'm precise, sometimes I'm not. That the Moscow, Idaho, which was an absolute low budget, such crap operations, but part of fear mongering. They said there was this, I think it was a stabbing of four beautiful young. They're always beautiful, they're young, and these operations are always color coded. Nowadays, since 2018 and onwards, I think. The color code now for their operations are purple in the US or magenta. And normally in Europe, they're magenta. The Europe and out of the US, magenta. So something very colorful would be in the center of these images, not the top one, further down below. And also they will leave shoes as a global mind control trigger. On these crime sites. So very often, like with mind control, I'm sure, Jason, it would be a lot better if you talk about these things, but mind control has been a lot of what I've been looking into as well, because like, how do they manage? How can they pull it off? How can they get us to believe that when it's actually so obvious that it's this that is going on? And as part of the thing that they're keeping us in constant fear mode are these mind control triggers, when they just activate these fear. And ever since the alleged Holocaust and before, they have used shoes, mountains of shoes, saying, look at that mountain of shoes, that's the evidence that 6 million people died. I would say, from a forensic point of view, look at that mountain of shoe. That's a forensic evidence that somebody has put a mountain of shoe over there. It doesn't prove anything, but it has got us into, I've been walking around in Holocaust, in concentration camps with tears coming down my cheek, you know, feeling, oh my God, oh my God. Now, the more I look into it, it's like, oh my God, what the hell they really messed. That's the main one that where they really got to us. But ever since then, the shoes have been used as a secondary trigger. We have alleged mass shootings or this or that and this. And then, boom, the shoes are left there on location. If you want to have an example, if you go to Dayton, Ohio, look at Google Images, Dayton, Ohio, or Ohio, you have like a parking lot with it's a corner of crime scene with an alleged mass shooting took place. And the evidence is like there's 42 trainers lying there. 42 trainers, most of them brand new, you know, they're just there in a big pile. It's like, okay, what is that proof? How is it even possible? What kind of weapon did they use to vaporize the victims? I mean, trainers are normally not easy to get off. In Holland, at the alleged Queen's Day attack, there were even rubber boots left in the street. I tell you, like, how, or riding boots also, normally you're two people, one that is kicking your butt to try and pull it off. So somebody that is running away from a car that is attacking, or somebody shooting, and they lose their shoes. You will see very often also in the text, they ran out of their shoes. How is that even possible? Or you have victims with shoes or without shoes. No, always without one shoe off, two shoes off, as also.
Okay,
as
just a tiny, tiny little anecdote, and I'll hand it over to Jason to jump in and ask questions or share insights.
Absolutely, I got lots of questions.
But just a little anecdote. This is like 2 years ago. My son was assigned a assignment at school, and it was basically tell us everything you learn about the ultimate death of Hitler in Germany. And I'm like, the only evidence they have of Hitler being killed ever was like a smoke stain on a concrete roof. Like it was, there's no evidence. I said to him, there's no evidence. He goes, Dad, I kind of have to just do it the way they told us, because I can't really open these conversations in high school right now. I just need to get my grade. I'm like, yeah, okay, fair enough. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, with the introduction that the audience missed, I'll backtrack because something really got my attention there.
Excellent.
You were saying you were, your family, who were operatives, were working for Esso. Is that correct?
My dad was, yeah.
And then for him to maneuver a bit more freely, but not completely freely, he had to go put blood on his hands regarding a lady. I got the impression she owned a small gas station. Is that true?
Yeah, let me explain it. It's like my dad came from the resistance movement in Denmark. He was not on the highest level. He was like third level down. And that many of the people that were recruited by the CIA in Norway, Denmark, and other countries, especially Norway and Denmark, that were under occupation, they went for people that were of the grade of major or a little bit lower, not the big ones, because they were too, I think they were too publicly known. So these people were recruited and then sent after the Second World War. They were sent to USA, to the US, where Fort Bragg, and Fort
Dietrich?
I can't remember the no, not Dietrich, that's more chemical, but special operations, assassinations, all of these things. There was 100 people from Denmark sent to the US, and then they were brought back into Denmark and were part of building a super secret NATO underground bases. There's one called Fort Stone, which is where my parents met, I believe now, not the official narrative I was told, but now I know how they met. Anyway, so my dad then left the military, or left, there's about 10 years where he just disappears, 9 years that he's gone. When I look into archives, when I look, it's been deleted. He is a non-person. And then he appears. He's working at a gas station, you know, like just filling up, and the women really liked him. So he got headhunted by Esso. That was the story we were being told, from just being, he was living in a bus with his dog behind a gas station, you know, pumping tires and filling cars, and then headhunted by Esso. And like this, he was the head of a major part of the Copenhagen controlling. It was his job to be sort of like the connecting dot or point between about 100 gas stations in Copenhagen, or a lot of them. And most of them were, I mean, I was in the car sometimes when we were driving around, and I remember that the people that we went to when he was going to these gas stations, officially just checking how you're doing, you know, because he was like franchises, were members, former members of the Danish resistance movement. Wow. And I tell you, this is it. They recruited them, and then they used these gas stations, which was Esso, owned by Statoil, which is Rockefeller's. And when you see the Rockefeller's involvement in so many different areas, and also, I mean, this is really, really genius when you think of it, because these gas stations are positioned in such strategic positions everywhere in big cities, you know, intersections and entrances into airports and you name it, they're there. They've been really studied before they put a gas stations anywhere. People have looked into it because it's of importance. And in a situation of crisis or occupation or war or whatever, if you can control the fuel is one, the fuel, but also the logistic points, you know, from a from an occupation point or sort of like, it's anyway. So I truly believe that his job was to, now the more I know, is to receive weapons from the West, mostly from the US. They were flying in and doing secret sort of like dumps. They built like these anonymous airstrips on farmers' land where they did at night, boom. And then my dad and his men were part of receiving these weapons and then distributing them out into these gas stations and other people where they were many. Do you know, like in a gas station, you have these big tanks.
Yeah.
Where you, one for diesel, one for high, whatever.
Yeah, unleaded, yeah.
Yeah, and so you have like big bulldozers and all, and nobody notices if there's a separate tank. That tank, I believe, was very often used for as a weapon depot, that's, you know, like mines, bazookas, maps, fuel, radio equipment, the whole shebang, which is part of the set of the Gladio setup, which, and the Gladio setup was set up for all NATO members. Every single one, including Sweden. It was the most super secret army ever created. And it was only in 1990 when a scandal erupted in Italy that showed that, oh my God, there's more than 10,000 people involved in Italy from a very low level all the way up to the president or the prime minister. And then every single NATO country had its scandals, but this was in the 1990s. And then they said, the government said, well, we're very sorry, we would never do a thing like this again, because they had turned it into like a terror tool in the mid 60s. They turned it into a terror tool and they started carrying out what are called the random acts of violence, this, according to the strategy of tension, to freak people out. We're back to mind control, keep people right in fear. By random, it needs to be random so that it can affect anyone. If you have
at any time,
yeah, anyone at any time, that's the one that will freak people out. So that's why they started shooting in supermarkets and train stations and bus stations and airports and just, oh my God, it could have been me, could have been me, it could have been me. And so it that was also the time when my parents, after the taking out of Kennedy, they tried to take out De Gaulle in France also, and they turned this whole organization into a pure terror tool where they were attacking the populations of mostly very liberate countries, you know, humanistic. These ones were the ones that they nailed over and over and over again so that the population would more and more say, yes, please, we need protection, help us, help us. And wow. In came more and more cameras, more and more militarized police, more and more. So many of these terror organizations, absolute bullshit. I keep finding Gladio, 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 Gladio. And then they say, well, we promise we will never do anything like that again. Yeah, right. And then they went under the radar for a little while, regrouped, renamed, and boom, up under and activate again. And so to this very day, what we're seeing, what I'm tracking down with all of these low budget, absolute bullshit operations many times that are only there to get into the mindset of people, freak them out, freak them out, freak them out. It's Gladio. It's Gladio all the time.
And you said that your dad trying to negotiate a way out, which is impossible, but maybe a soft exit. He had, obviously, there was another SO franchisee, a female older lady that would not play ball with maybe the weapons cachet.
No, it was a BP, British Petroleum gas station.
Oh, okay.
And was located right at the entrance into the airport, the international airport. Very strategic, very important. And she wouldn't bend over. She wouldn't give up. And so they had to persuade her and she ended up dead. And I don't know if that was intended. It's still a cold case in Denmark. if that was an intended murder, at least she ended up dead. She would hit in the head multiple times with a hammer. The thing is, the way I woke up to this whole thing about my parents was that, like I mentioned before, my dad died in 1992. And I mean, never, ever have I heard anything about this. And then in 2017, I think it was, I was living in Spain. And I had this dream where I can remember my dad's voice saying, the key is in the ring. The key is in the ring. So I woke up like, and I shook my sweetheart. I said, Kim. And she said, yes, what? I said, the key is in the ring. She said, the key is in the ring. And she was like, what ring? I said, I don't know, but the key is in the ring. And so I was like, it was such a powerful dream, you know, because he's never come to me in dreams or anything like that, not at all. And so I was like, when I think of him, one of the things that was part of his body was this silver ring that he had since I was forever and ever, and with an amethyst in it. So I've never looked at it, you know, it's just like it's his ring. And I was the one who was there when he died. And the only thing, he was naked in a hospital bed. The only thing he was wearing was that ring. And the only thing I wanted after him, you know, was his ring.
Mm-hmm.
So I had it sort of like on a little shrine in down where we're living in Spain there. So I went straight down there. I mean, like, wait, I need to wake up. What the hell? Let's have what's with the ring? I looked at it. That was the first time I really looked at it because it's very worn. It's an American Air Force ring. So I ask you, how can a Danish citizen get an American Air Force ring? That does not happen. And that ring is the thing that got me started. And it's just been expanding. And then I got I even found like NATO's the most top secret underground base on the east coast of Denmark. The thing with Denmark, I was super naive. I thought Denmark is just this tiny little pretty country that doesn't really do anything. No, it was frontline to Russia during the alleged Cold War, because Finland was already under control. Sweden was neutral. So the front line towards the east was Denmark, the east coast of Denmark. That's also the entrance into the Baltic Sea. It's a super strategic point. And all of my family was living in very strategic points. We were moving and lived in very strategic points with full view over the sea, with full view in, or I mean, when I look at it from a point of an operation view, it's like perfect. Boom, boom, boom. And this was not only my parents, my grandparents were involved in it. When Gladio was started, now historical facts now is that after the Second World War, when this was activated, there was about 500,000 Danes involved secretly in building up this organization, meaning that it's not that much of a tinfoil speculation that could my parents, my grandparents, I would say the more I look at it, yes, I think my mother was even donated by my granddad, who was a very devout Christian and also quite a cold, hard individual. I think that my mother was donated into this organization as a honey trap, and also because she was very good with languages. She spoke like five languages fluently. She could do all kinds of, you know, quick texting, blah, 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 translating. That was her whole life. And so she was used from day one. And then my father took over. First she was with another military guy. Then my dad took over. And they activated another whole thing where my mother was, I don't think she was ever deeply involved. She was being used sexually as well, I believe, I'm sorry to say. And then when she left my dad or was moved from my dad after 23 years of marriage, she was taken over, I would suggest, by another operative, a former MI6 agent, who was very much into mind control. He translated. He was living in Gothenburg, but English. He was a former Royal Air Force bomber pilot. He was part of the operation where they had these bombs. They dropped them to bounce on the water to hit one of these big dams. It's a famous
right.
bombing.
Anyway, I remember. Yeah.
Anyway, he was. My mother later started working for him when she left my dad, but actually he was taking her from my dad, and she started behaving very strange, like really under mind control. And she was saying later that this man could actually activate her remotely sexually, in really embarrassing her, making her, I mean, this is very private things, but like really bizarre stuff. And this man, who I later think was very deeply involved in pedophile rings in Sweden.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
also the translator of some very scientific books about mind control and brain, I mean, on a very, very high level, because he translated books from Norwegian, I believe from Norwegian to English in this area. Swedish, and if you look at the development of MK Ultra and these operations, you have several places in Norway and several professors. There was one Spanish guy also in the 50s, very, very frontline with this type of research.
Delgado, so, was it?
The guy that could get the bull to just...
Yeah, Delgado.
And so there were Norwegians involved with Delgado also. In these type of operations, and it's just it's a big one. I saw while I was, I mean, this is very emotional for me as well, because the more I think of it, you know, they have been living a double life. They have known and been involved in something I had no idea my whole life, meaning that every single conversation we had, they were aware of something else. And also, since they saw what I was doing, also deliberately keeping me out of the loop, not maybe because of protecting me, I don't know why, but I mean, my mother even helped me translate my books to English, you know. And one chapter is about Stay Behind, which is another name for Gladio. And even there's one part of it around... talking about Denmark, the setup in Denmark, which was exactly what they were involved in. Never mentioned it with a word, never said anything.
Wow.
But I think it's because these operations are still active. You know, they said ended in the 90s, but they're still doing it, I tell you.
So do you think you've deciphered the clue from the dream about the ring? I mean, do you think you know why that was important?
I think that was the starting point. It's very possible. It's a very good question. Thank you, Neil. Okay, so the key is in the ring. The key is in the ring. So the American Air Force, boom. And then I tracked it down to this underground, super secret underground base, which is now a Cold War museum. So I've been down these tunnels, and I have a photo of my parents in a Chevrolet Bel Air 58, no, 57. And the photo is taken in 1957 in the location of the entrance into this underground base. I mean, this is way out in the middle of nowhere. I've managed to track down the exact location where that photo was taken 60 years earlier, meaning, and my dad is sitting there with, you know, like James Bond glasses, and my mother is sitting smoking, and they're looking very happy. But the thing is, a Chevy Bel Air, that car, that would be like a brand new Lamborghini for me, you know, if I was sitting in like that's one of the most extreme cars at the time. And my dad used to say, it's only myself and Elvis who had this model. I'm like, What? And then I see there's five different people that I've started to track down, friends of my father and people that he officially didn't know. But I tell you, they knew each other and they have lived very similar life. They come from the Danish resistance movement, and then they started doing very similar things. All of them had jobs where they could drive around freely, you know, doing stuff without really people, what are you doing there? What are you doing there? And one of them, his granddaughter has made a documentary called Stay Behind, my granddad's secret war, or it's the other one, my granddad's secret war, Stay Behind. I can't remember the name completely. I just saw it by coincidence. When I saw that was just like, oh my God, that is my life. She was describing her father's childhood, actually, because she was the granddaughter. But it was so similar to mine. And it's a really low-key, beautiful documentary where she has a dialogue with her granddad that was still alive, where she asks direct questions. And you can see he loves her. So he doesn't want to lie. And he admires her for having the guts to look into these things. And still he's lying. But he's lying in a way that it's very obvious. And then you have the grandmother. These two were also put together as assets. The grandmother is a rock hard asset, you know, and you can see her eyes when she's like, if you say anything, you know, it's really it's a very, very interesting, very, very interesting documentary. And then I have another friend who. Well, it's incredible. And she said, well, it sounds a little bit like my dad. And I said, okay. So she started telling me about her dad, very, very similar like that. And then, so I said, have you got any photos, any letters? Yeah. She said, my dad, he had this photo that was very important to him. I don't know who it is. He's there with somebody, but I don't know who it is. But anyway, so she went and got it. Her dad had died some years before. So she brings me this photo, and it's her dad standing, Danish soldier, standing in a full, the whole thing, even with a military thing, even with a bush, you know, on top of his helmet, like that. And it's two people. He's standing like they're very much involved in like a private conversation, the two of them. Do you know who this second guy is? It's no. Dwight Eisenhower, the Allied Supreme Commander. Wow. President of the United States. These two people are standing talking like that. It's just one of these things where I'm saying it's on a level that is unbelievable, you know, where these.
Okay. Yeah. I have one super, it's an easy question to ask, but it could be a completely different conversation to answer. So if it's not a simple answer, we can park it for later, but your parents were part of the resistance, the Danish resistance against the Nazis in the Second World War. But there's a lot of people that think that the Fourth Reich are sort of in charge now, like that they've somehow merged. Is it possible that the resistance became the cult that's running things now? And they merged with the Nazis at some level?
I think that the Nazis never went away. And I think that Adolf Hitler, once you start looking into him, you will sort of have to unlearn a lot. We have this thing about demonizing leaders and making them horrible so that will justify this. And I mean, I used to think that I was really good at history. And now, you know, I don't even want to look into history books because it's like that is just not true. I've been to many of these concentration camps. I've been like battlefields. I've been all kinds of stuff. And I've had to relearn a lot. And I'm looking at Adolf Hitler in a completely different way now. Also, when you listen to his speeches, his books, you know, there's a reason why these books are banned. It's because they don't want you to know who he really was. So yes, Germany went in, occupied Norway and Denmark from 40 to 45. And the resistance movement were fighting against the demon Hitler, who he was like the devil. So they were fighting for their nation and for their country. They were then recruited at the end of the Second World War. They were headhunted, you know, certain specific individuals with by the CIA and MI6. These were the two organizations that went into specifically these two countries, but many other countries also. And the reason for that was because they were preparing for the setup of the Cold War, because these forces thrive on conflict, death, destruction. They do not want peace. So when the Second World War finally came to an end, finally for us, sadly for them, because with the money machine stopped, they were already preparing for the next chapter, which was the Cold War, which was dividing the world up into East and West, and then they could generate a lot of fear there. And so the reason I would say that the alleged A-bombs were dropped over Nagasaki and Hiroshima, when you look at it now, that was not bombings like that. They don't have the... Let's forget about that one. But these one was completely not what we were being told. But the effect was incredibly... The reason they did was just to freak people out, say, these are the type of weapons that exist. This can happen anytime now. Look at the East and the West, and they're aiming these guns at each other. So you better be shit scared. There's no reason, especially they said that it was to make Japan surrender. Come on. To do a thing like that on a civilian location, that is just absolute mass murder. First one over Hiroshima, Japan didn't even have chance to say, yes, we surrender. And then they drop a second one over Nagasaki just as a beta test type of thing to freak people out. So that they were creating, and they were very aware of that the Cold War will start. And so as part of this conflict, you also need to build up armies on both sides that will believe that there is such a thing as a conflict going on. I'm saying on a broader scale. So the elements that created this was Nazi elements, the mentality I'm talking about now. It's not this one, but the Nazi way of thinking. Yeah, and they never left. You got when you look at the Bush clan and the Rockefellers and the whole shebang nowadays. I mean, whatever Nazism, they are it. It never left.
Only, is your mic completely plugged in? Because there's a bit of a rattle, and you went out a couple of times. I just want to, if it's not, I don't know where it's plugged, but you're good. Okay. I got a sort of a question. Or so basically, the public should come away with the fact that these corporations are sort of the same corporations that surround them now. The corporations have this altruistic shine to them, Walmart, Esso. These corporations are literally surrounding and hunting the public at this time. Am I right? Like, no, would Walmart be purposely, polluting their food, poisoning their food that they serve the people to create more conflict, more crisis, which seems to be the underlying, I mean, we have all these cancers exploding now, just to bring it into today's context. We have all the cancers that are linked to the injection. We have all this disease, and this leads to the government coming ahead and say, look, we got to take care of you. You got all this cancer now. The big four pharmaceutical giants have now purchased interest or majority shares or complete companies in cancer research facilities. So is the public getting the wrong impression that these corporations are there to serve them, when really they could be potentially like the ISO that you're talking about?
You know, in the old days, you had empires like the Roman empires. Then you had royal families and these type of things. Then you had like empires like the Great British Empire and so on. Then it became families like the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Wallenbergs, and so on. Then the more and more like they concentrated the power to fewer and fewer and fewer, it started becoming very obvious that who's behind it. So they started creating companies that were And then these companies became multinational companies, which are the same power structure. It's just that now they're hiding behind these things. And then through the control, you don't need to own a company to control it. So through control, through the control of different companies, they've started doing, they've waged war on us, you know. So like Walmart, these are built as the buildings are, many of these buildings in some of these type of companies are built so that they can very easily be changed into like FEMA camps or prisons, yeah, or schools, according to Agenda 21. It's one day it's a school, next day it's a prison. You know, that's the whole regulation. And then they start through their companies, their food companies, produce food that is really bad for us, and then sell them in their companies, making money on our death, so that we get sick, so that we need their pharmaceutical products that are made on oil crap that they couldn't use. So they're giving us the medicine that will then deal with the symptoms, not the disease, and so that we will get a lot of side effects, so that we will get more sick, so we need more. So it's like just a bum, 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 bum. And then through media, they can completely turn things around so that everything we're being told is good for us. I tell you, I would very much look into it, because most of the time it's very deadly. It's a horror stuff. And the things that are good for us are being banned. And people that are saying things like this will be shot and killed or whatever. And people who follow the propaganda will be, they can be completely brain dead, but they will be lifted up like this and put in key positions where they know how to shut up. They get involved in these Freemasonic networks, are being, thank you so much for being an absolute spineless individual, but that can be controlled. They would be paid, and you would get all kinds of bonus and benefits as part of destruction of humanity. So it's like, yes, I would say yes, it's just an upgrade of the same.
Wow. I got one more question. It's like, it's like a jackpot trying to ask these questions so someone knows exactly what's going on. Now, Oli, you said that the COVID operation, which was fraudulent back, front to back, up to down, and nothing existed. There was no crisis. I mean, everybody's, who knows, who has one living brain cell left to rub together, they know that was fake. But you said, I don't know if it was in the introduction that was not recorded, but somewhere in there, you said this was sort of their second attempt, sort of a whiff of what they really wanted to do. It was dismantled. They really wanted to really bring the Deagle population forecast to fruition. They've missed the mark. But what was this original plan that was foiled, only to leave this minor depopulation plan on the table? What was the original plan that was foiled?
That's a super good question. Thank you, Jason. Am I okay to ramble on a little bit?
Absolutely.
Totally fine with me. I don't know how Jason, it's a bit later. Oh no, Jason, you're in the same time zone.
I'm okay, in the same time zone. I got some people coming over in 20 minutes, but I'll just keep the door locked to hear this answer.
Okay. So the thing was that I was on tour in 2019, in October 2019. And I was, one of the things I was doing in Sweden was that I was exposing this alleged truck attack that happened there. Because there was one insider, his name is Ola Slettenmark, and he was working for something called MSB, which is the Swedish variation, and also the connection with the US FEMA. And FEMA is part of creating mayhem. These organizations are part of creating the problems that they then can solve. They are the ones creating the problems that they can then solve. Anyway, so he gives this presentation some months after this alleged truck attack. And in the presentation, this was not supposed to be filmed and let out. And in it, he says that 1 minute before the truck attack happened, he activated the highest alert of terror threat level and then activated all of these organizations like this to then act in and do all of these things 1 minute before the attack happened. I mean, that is the best smoking gun ever. And I mean, I have done my absolute utmost to completely destroy this guy's career and expose him, because he thereby very clearly, and in that presentation also, he goes step by step by step by step, what, how they carried it out, how they did it, but for our protection. Anyway, so he was of interest to me when I was also, because they tried to shut us down and they tried to, I mean, they were pushing drugs in our RV and stuff like that to stop the whole thing. But anyway, I'd never heard of this guy. And so I was tracking him down and I started seeing that he was working on an international level, on a very high level, but very sort of anonymous type of thing. And then I found his private Twitter account. And in that Twitter account, there was these bizarre tweets that the more I looked into it, I was like, oh my God, what on earth? Because when you start seeing that he was involved in many of these other, like the alleged van attack in Barcelona, he was in Canada when the alleged van attack happened there in Toronto, absolute bullshit operation there as well. But this guy was like, boom, 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 like almost like an incident manager for these operations. So I started looking into his Twitter account and I was just digging deeper and deeper. And I don't know if you believe in angels or whatever, but I think that somebody up there is sometimes guiding me, because it's put in front of me more than I'm sort of like, oh, I have to look. It's just like, oh my God. And then being this nerd in this area, this Rain Man in this area, I noticed these things. So anyway, so in the tweets, he said that he was now in Barcelona and he had just celebrated his 500th meeting, 500 meeting with, it wasn't really clear who that was, but when you see how with this MSB, FEMA, the whole setup, 500 meeting, that is Sweden locally. So, and then he said, we've now decided to lock in on 39 locations. The time span will be 36 hours and the cities will be, Manchester, London, Barcelona, Paris, which one? Rotterdam and Sweden. The dates will be October 23 and 24. And when the more I started looking into what he was saying, that they decided and locked in on 39 coordinated incidents in these 39 different locations, I was just like, because I've learned to understand the way they communicate, and it was a bit more camouflaged than this, but what I heard was like they have locked in, decided to possibly make a coordinated attack on 39 places within the time span of 36 hours. The dates will be October 23 and 24, which was also the date of the anniversary of NATO. So the more I looked into it, I mean, I just felt completely sick to my stomach, because Manchester, London, Paris, Barcelona, Rotterdam, all of them have been hit by so-called terror attacks, which I have debunked or predicted every single one of them. So these would be areas that were where they could just recycle the same people in the investigations and the whole thing. They always use the same people around.
Right.
So the more I looked into it was that, it's a long story, but anyway, I really felt sick to my stomach and felt, oh my God, if what I see is true, then they really might be trying to go for it. This is also like later I found out that Event 201, are you aware of Event 201?
Yeah, of course, yes. September.
Yeah. No, that was in October.
Oh, it was 18. October.
Yeah, I was the one that blew the whistle on, one of the few that blew the whistle on Event 201, because that happened just 2 days. I discovered this whole thing on October 21st when I started suspecting. Later, I found out that the Event 201 had been on October 18. And then the date that they wanted to go live with this one, October 23 and 24. Let me make it short, because I went out and I bombarded to hundreds of radio shows all over the world. I spent like 12 hours nonstop. I have an incredible network with radio hosts, really brave people around the world. So I pumped out and I said, listen, guys, I have no idea, but this is what I suspect. According to this, 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 and this, we still have like 36 hours before they go live. So please, please, if you think this is of value, spread it, because if it's true, we can possibly stop it if we get enough people aware of it, because then they don't dare do it. So it started spreading all over. It went viral and people started doing their own videos, you know, in foreign languages. I had like Bulgarian variations and Greek variations and stuff, where people were like, oh, blah, 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 bombi, bombi, damagard, boom, warning, warning. So the thing was, when we came to October 23, I was still in Sweden, and I was like, maybe I completely misunderstood this. In that case, I looked like an absolute idiot. Not a problem. I did my best, but whatever. So on the 23rd, I was waiting. Either it's going to go bum, 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 we were too late, or nothing, we managed to stop it, or nothing, I was completely wrong. So on the October the 23rd, more or less nothing happened. So I felt, I don't know. Then I was contacted by a journalist in Brussels, which is Belgium, which is also the headquarters for NATO, and also for Mossad, their headquarters for Europe is there. So anyway, so she said to me, I've been working here in Brussels for years, and I have very good contacts in the military area, police, the intelligence community, and so on. And for months, we've been feeling that something major is building up, and no one has understood what. Then she said, then we saw your warning, and suddenly everything fell into place. I said, okay. So she said, are you aware of what's happening in Brussels right now? I said, I have absolutely no clue. She said, all the foreign ministers of NATO membering countries have been called for an urgent meeting in Brussels right now. And as far as she could see, it was because of that warning. So not one, but all of the foreign ministers from NATO nations were called to that emergency meeting right now. And I mean, okay, for me, it was like, I was just pumping it out. I didn't know that there were going to be like things like that. So I spoke to her. Then another person contacted me and said, I saw your warning. He said, it's amazing. I'm very happy that you did that. Are you aware of what's going on with the Israeli embassies? I said, I have no idea what's going on with them. He said, all the Israeli embassies and consulates globally has been closed down. I was like, what? And they say later, it says that it was because of a general strike for better wages. Really? They could organize that all of them closed down. I mean, something was going on there. I'm talking about the time span now, October 23, 24 and 25. Okay. So at the same time, also, this just went bigger and bigger and bigger. And then there was a very high-level website called, I cannot remember it now, but that's a website where presidents and prime ministers are writing the articles and stuff like that. And on the 24th, it said there was this head, the headline news or whatever you call it, said that NATO near implosion, NATO near implosion, that it would be destroyed from the inside. And then at the very same time, also Boeing and NATO signed a deal, a $1 billion deal, that made quite a lot of stirring, because people noticed it, because nothing else was happening. There was a lot of like, what the hell? And one of the things that they were investing in was global surveillance, you know, this type of thing that we don't want, I don't want. Then on the Monday, there had been called for a press conference where the head of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, former prime minister of Norway, who I believe was given that post as a thank you for his part of the alleged massacre on Utö and the blowing up of the government building in Norway. That press conference had been planned, I think, so that they would go live after these attacks. And in it, instead, it was like 5 minutes where he's sitting like completely pale, and he's like, This press comes on. He was shitting. So
they were
going
to do. Let me just to make sure I'm capturing the story. They were going to do a series of false flags, crisis actors, like set the world on fire with false flags, essentially. And then they were going to announce
that they were under attack
or something like that.
I'm gonna tell you because I've been informed more and more from the inside what was being planned. The thing was that they were planning a coordinated 39 coordinated attacks, you know, on not crisis actor, not fake things, but blowing up strategic positions like this, you know, like water supplies, food factories, NATO headquarters, so they attack themselves, so that could be like a military. The reason, I mean, when you look at 9/11, the reason they hit Pentagon was because to make it, they activate the military, because had it been civilian targets, the military would not be allowed. And here they wanted to start the war of terror. So it's same here. They would have gone for a train station, all of these things that has to do with communication, to do just hit, knock it out. And also the reason for Rotterdam, because Rotterdam is the main port for food import in Europe. You knock out that port and you can create famine in Europe within a month, within a week, because nowadays food is only... it's not in storage, it's being transported all the time. And it's later turned out that the bomb that was planned for Rotterdam was the thing that they later used in Beirut. I don't know if you noticed that there was this very bizarre bomb that blew up the harbor in Beirut some months after.
Yeah, at a wheat storage facility. Yeah, grain storage, and it was just massive. It was
massive. They say it was a fireworks factory that there was this fire. No, there was the fire first, and then you had a massive missile that just blew the whole thing to Japan. That thing had been planned for Rotterdam. And also there was so they were going to do 39 coordinated attacks. That was the idea. Do you know how many that is? That's boom, 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 that is a lot of mayhem. That is a lot of mayhem if boom, 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 boom. It goes like this in West Europe, Western Europe. And so at the same time also, I was contacted by people in Sweden who said that they were planning a drill of a nuclear meltdown at a nuclear power plant in northeast of Sweden, northeast of Stockholm, where, and also a water supply big thing that they were going to do that with 1,600 crisis actors. That's the official number, 1,600, because radioactivity, it's something that is also an incredible weapon because it is invisible. So if you control the news, if you control the weather reports, you can just say, well, this radioactive cloud is now coming over Denmark. You stay indoors, lockdown, martial law, you know, and now it's spreading. It's going down over Belgium and Holland. And oh, my God, stay indoors like that. Just keep on your radio. Don't do anything. Stay indoors. And then, so the idea, I truly believe, was that there's another organization that was involved in this. It's the World Military Games that was created at the same time as the CIA and the CDC and all of these right after the end of the Second World War. These are like Olympic Games for people that have been completely messed up in war most of the time. Arms off, legs off, all of these things. And backed by the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, these type of bizarre things. It's a very weird organization. But anyway, they had, right at that time, they had the World Military Games. Where? In Wuhan, China. So there was 10,000 military personnel, NATO personnel in Wuhan, China, at the time where this virus just suddenly, whoop, bat, fish, whatever you want to believe, was released there. So the plan, as far as I've been able to figure it out, is that they were bringing all of these NATO troops over there. Boom. Then they officially this virus was let loose. I mean, if you believe in that there was a virus, I think there was a mind virus. If anything else, it was fear, fear, fear. But anyway, so all of these soldiers were there. Then you have 39 coordinated attacks in Europe. Bum, 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 bum. Meaning that within 24 hours, these 10,000 soldiers were being called back to their home country saying, oh my God, we need to get our boys and girls in uniform back home and help in this situation.
Right.
Indirectly and unknowingly
spreading the virus. The fake virus.
So within 24 hours, you would have the whole world infected. And there's a lot of articles also talking about that the soldiers brought the virus to these things. So,
oh my God. I love it. So, I love the good, not connected. I don't love the mayhem.
And then as part of this whole thing was the virus also. The virus was only there to get people to get the jab so that they were in this martial law situation, locked indoors. Lockdown, by the way, it's a prison term, not a health term. So that we would only be allowed out if we accepted the jab. And then there was also the lockdown was for the unleash of 5G because they need very fast bandwidth for the Internet of Things, for smart cities, 15-minute cities, all of this whole horror story. So the virus, the coronavirus, was a tiny little part of this operation, an important one, but tiny. But then a few days later...
Hold on, guys, I gotta go.
I was contacted by this freelance journalist again, and she said that she had inside information from these meetings with the NATO, all the foreign ministers of NATO, where they had decided that this is getting completely out of hand. Too many, I mean, we're talking like possibly millions of people knew what was going to go down by then. So they decided to go under the radar, stay low, and wait. I'm just saying that there was another meeting with these NATO foreign ministers, where apparently a decision was made to take it cool, stay low, go under the radar, wait until all of this blew over, and then wait for some kind of distraction, and then release the only thing that was left. All the violence was gone, all of the bombs, all of that. They couldn't use it. So the only thing they still had was the virus. So that was the only thing they could use. And so they were waiting for a big distraction. And what better distraction than Christmas and New Year's Eve? So suddenly the whole world forgot about this and they were just focused on getting as much Christmas presents and release the guilt feelings and whatever, and then get drunk on New Year's Eve. When people are drunk, that is military-wise the day that you get attacked. When people are lying there sleeping with a hangover, or in church, that's when the armies attack. That's historical fact. And so here we have on New Year's Eve, that's the very first order given to fabricate a vaccine, and also the very first case of COVID that they say. Now they say, no, it was in September, it was October. I've got screenshots where it said this first thing, and that was on January the 1st. I think, why could it be for tax reasons? You know, like the January the 1st, it's an interesting date, you know, the beginning, or maybe ritualistic or satanic. I mean, these individuals are into so much weird stuff. So if you haven't noticed, the pandemic or this whatever it was, it didn't come like, oh my God, people are dying all over the world. We were being shown weird videos, blurry videos mm-hmm. from China, where people were going around shooting people and welding the doors and whatever. And then nothing happened, nothing. Well, there's a pandemic, but nobody really cares. And then mid-March, boom, suddenly we were hit like boom. So they had to get it in like this, face it in. And then when we were suddenly like, okay, oh my God, we're in a weird situation. And that's when the talk started where we were, you know, because then suddenly, but the only thing they had by then was the virus. And this is why all of these weird things with empty hospitals and empty, we were not supposed to see these things. We were supposed to be locked in the houses, martial law, All of the, we were not supposed to have access to the internet.
Access
we
to
not...
the hospitals, right? People walking in, it kind of screwed everything up. Gentlemen, I have to bow out, but Oli, I tell you, I'm going to be I got to go. So as someone who's listening to this, similar to me, what's the best website? What are the books? How do we keep feeding on your content here? Because I did see your report on the shoes. I know the voice now. I'm connecting about the shoes. But where else can we see some of your videos and everything like that?
I'm being shut down right, left, and center. So what can I say? But my website is Damagard, DamagardMDamagard.com or LightOnConspiracies.com.
Just Damagard? Just Damagard.com?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
And like I said before, there's more than 1,200 of my interviews. There's podcasts, there's webinars, there's, I mean, you can stay on there. There's more than 5,000 articles that I have hand-picked and vetted for. So as far as I know, everything on that website is true. As far as I've been able to, I put my name under it saying, because I've been trying to create a platform where people can come to, and whatever the area they're interested in, may it be vaccines or chemtrails or you name it, that here is a starting point where they can get basic information, and then with all of these links going out in many different directions. So
thanks. Thanks, Jason. I'll just wrap up with a couple of questions with Ole. And
yeah,
maybe
just
we'll
keep
two.
The...
Maybe it'll make sense to do a part two at some point. Yeah.
We could do a double interview deal.
We can
question after question. Okay, gentlemen, it's an excellent pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, Jason.
Okay.
Enjoy. Bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
I guess just a couple of thoughts. I mean, we could talk for another 90 minutes, but I think it will be fun if we get Jason back. That'd be really fun because there's such an overlap. Because there's not that many experts. You're both experts in your field. But you're starting from the same place. Like you can say things that are sensational to some people, but I know where he's at, and I know you're on the same ground. So you can start your conversation from a very rock solid ground and go from there, basically. I just remembered you were friends with Max Egan. Did you keep in touch with Max? He's in Mexico now.
Yeah, we're friends. We met he stayed in our house several times, and yeah, for sure, we're in touch. But he's very busy. I'm very busy, and he delivers a lot of very interesting information. I think
he set lights on for me in terms of, when you were talking about Nagasaki and Hiroshima. He really put some lights on a number of topics. But both of you, I've lost touch. I don't know for whatever reason. But anyway. Do you mind just doing one final tie-in, if you know, or if you have a position on the role of Israeli embassies and the Mossad? Like, was there a role tie-in there, or it's just the craziest coincidence of all time?
I mean, I didn't even get to the whole thing in the end because there was more things connected to it. I don't really understand what that was. Except that they might have been freaking out because Mossad is deeply involved. The thing, when you look at most people say CIA, Mossad, South African boss, like that they're like separate entities. They are on a street level, but the more you come up or actually down, the more connected they are. They really serve that one, the guy who likes a hot climate and eats with a big fork. So Mossad and the CIA are very, very closely, and Israel and the US, it's like, it's almost like Israel is above the US. I mean, it's like very, very bizarre to say the least. And so I think they're deeply connected. I also know that right when this thing happened, I got contacted by a guy. We're talking about the 39 coordinated attacks, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. So just a few days later, I got from the US, where they said that, are you aware that right now, after your warning and after these things happen, that Vice President Mike Pence and the Secretary of Defense were called back urgently from the Middle East. So they flew back to Washington, D.C. They had these meetings as well. And then Donald Trump stepped forward and did a very bizarre thing, I think, just a few days later, where he had held a press conference where he said that we finally managed to kill the leader of ISIS, al-Baghdadi. And I think that is amazing, especially when you think that that was the fourth time he got killed. So, you know, get your facts straight. And when you start really looking into ISIS, you will see that this is a creation by the Israeli Mossad, but also the U.S. State Department, funded by Saudi money and other things like that. And then backing Toyota, who is supplying all of the vehicles to these operations as well. So why did he do that? Because, I mean, you can only kill if you don't really, as a hardcore believer in reincarnation, normally people get killed once. But here we have four times they've used that as a diversion. Look over there, look over there, look over there. So for some reason, Donald with a hairdo, who I don't know who he really is, he pointed away from this whole thing. And at least that's what the timing was, because it was like, bam, 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 bam. Like that. So I have no idea what I did. I really think that without knowing it, I messed up a lot.
It sounds like, I mean, they call the NATO foreign ministers, you know, like the reaction that you caused was immense. Yeah. And if the bombs were like the one in Beirut, I remember that when Jason shared the details, like the wheat factory or whatever it was in Beirut, that was a massive, massive bomb. The whole world heard about that bomb. It was so big.
It was not wheat. It was a fireworks factory.
Okay.
And but it was right in the port of Beirut. I don't know why they hit that, but sometimes they do these beta tests. You know, they're just testing out weapon technology, and then they say, "Well, let's just hit them anyway." I mean, while we're at it, because there was I couldn't really understand and see any purpose of that attack there. But like, according to an insider, that bomb was planned for Rotterdam, but because this was exposed and stopped, they couldn't pull it off. So I really think that divinely guided, I have no idea what path I was led that made me find this Twitter account, that made me find these tweets, that made me get to the conclusion of like, oh my God. And then thanks to all of these brave radio hosts out there that helped me spread this information, and also the people that spread it also to their friends and families, that suddenly there was an awareness before they could go live with it. That was the thing that stopped it. And this is also the way we can stop things, you know, in the future. I think it's super powerful, but we need to help each other. We need to become aware of the modus operandi and then use it against them. So
that takes me. Yep. Go ahead.
No, because also what they loved, their wet dreams, these dark individuals, their wet dreams is to shut down the internet as we know it. They've been trying to multiple times to shut it down the way we know it, and then instead make it a commercial version where we can pay them to get the information they decide that we are should have access to. So I can almost guarantee you, because you will see that at Event 201 also, where they were going through how we're going to deal with this, how really study Event 201. Think of it, when did it occur? Because it's almost like just a few days before they go live, they have these drills. And this was a real where they went through how we're going to deal with media, how we're going to deal with politicians, how we're going to deal with world leaders, how are we going to deal with that, how are we going to deal with the population. And they haven't dared to take it down because so many of us have pointed there.
It must be this karma thing that you're talking about. Like the fact that it's the fingerprints of the crime is right there in that video, and they've left it up on YouTube, which is totally controlled. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, but they don't dare to take the website, as far as I know, is still there. But there is a message saying any similarities reality has nothing to do with, we're so innocent. Absolutely, this is what you can get from me. That would be like, it's like saying that, that they had made like a concert piece that was identical to one written by Beethoven and it was just a coincidence. I mean, absolute bullshit. That is what it is. They, and we should really, really carefully go through the people that were there, the ones, the key players, because they were the ones. You will see several of them are later the ones in 6 months later that are some of the key players in what went live.
Mm.
You know, these are not just coincidences. These are super criminals that are carrying it out against humanity.
I'm actually having a flashback. I can't remember exactly, but it was before the whole thing happened. I watched a podcast or a YouTube of yours, and you were reporting on an event, and I went and found some of these people that were at the event on LinkedIn, and most of them were freaked out by that because you were making them famous, and then I'm looking them up, basically, but they were medical people or pharma people, to my recollection, but anyway, I guess they got the last laugh because they pulled the thing off anyway. I mean, no,
I think the corona part was a massive big failure. I mean, a mess. They couldn't get to where they wanted to. They really tried. I mean, they by getting people in this spell thing, you know, with the once again with the fear spell, and then letting people suicide themselves with this horror bioweapon crap.
Best news, the one I will shift the positive wrap up, but the best one of my favorite data points is by the spring of 2022. So like by May or June of 2022, maybe it was April, they're having less than 5% going for boosters. Like nobody was doing vaxes anymore by the spring. Like the awareness had gotten to that monkeypox or whatever it was, or Omicron, whatever the stories they were spinning, the whole population basically went anti-vax. They dropped it. They had saturated the population with that story, and they've been trying to get one back ever since, I think, roughly. Yeah.
And this is the beauty of what we're doing. This is the beauty of it. When we make it transparent, we pull the curtain and you start seeing the Wizard of Oz, that he's just a small little weak individual with no backbone and mostly older men that, the thing is, once that the spell is broken, they need you to get up the fear mongering. Mm-hmm. You need to be in fear mode to be controlled. People are so exhausted now. They can't even get bothered anymore. Oh, there's another. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't care. Even if they don't know, they can't. It's very hard for them to get as scared as they used to be. And so they're losing power. The more fearless we become, the more they lose power. So I would suggest.
That's the metaphor Jason uses a lot, is once you know the magician's tricks, they don't work anymore.
And that's what I specialize in, pulling the pants down and then saying, listen, this is how they do it. Just like if it had been like David Copperfield or something like that, I would be able to say, okay, don't watch his right hand where he's like, oh, look, a rabbit. Look at the left one. What is the left one doing? Don't look where he wants you to look. Look, and I'm like this everywhere else. You know, that's how you see it. That is how you see it. So it's a matter. And once the somebody has shown, that's how it's done. They can't pull it off again, and they don't have that many, you know, cards up their sleeve. Yeah, right. I'll tell you one time, a friend of mine. If you got 2 minutes,
no, absolutely, I've got time.
Okay, so a friend of mine who is an amateur magician, he did this trick, absolutely incredible. He took one of these bags of sugar, and then he did like that. He took his hand like that, and he poured the sugar into his fist like that. Then he like really, you know, pushed it together like that, and then he went like this. Sugar gone. The sugar was not there anymore. It's like, how the hell did that happen? And then he went like this, and he did, and he said, okay, I'll just do it like that. And then he poured out the sugar. I was like, That is exactly how that is how they do it. So I got, you know, I got so I needed to find out how is this done, because this is the exact illusion. And all of it, all it took was a rubber thumb. I kept going to his shows. I sat in different angles. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I saw it's a rubber thumb. So he has a rubber thumb that is colored the same, skin colored. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he does like that. Boom. The rubber thumb is in there. He fills the sugar into the rubber thumb. Then he takes it like that. He put it on his finger. Then he goes like this.
Yeah.
Where is the sugar? Then he goes like this. He pulls it off and he said, it's here. And he, do you see, it's an illusion. It's an illusion. And it's not even magic. It's not magic. It's just an illusion. So just keep your senses open. Do not look at what they want you to look. That's a diversion in all military operations or psychological operations. Mm-hmm. There's something, boom,
that's going off. That's why they use the... That's why they use the attractive assistant, because everybody's looking at her when he's doing his tricks.
There you go as well. It's like, it's a mind fuckery. You need to, and it's been really interesting. I've been, when I've been on tour twice, people have come up from the audience when I've been talking about false flag operations, how they do it or that whole thing. He said, what you're saying is absolutely amazing. He said, you're describing my job. And I said, okay, so what's your job, you know? And one of them said, I'm a magician. The other one said, I'm an illusionist. Yeah. That's because he said exactly the way you describe these operations is what I do with the audience. Look over there, do you know, this, divert the attention, do this, do that. And so we're up against an illusionist, because life is absolutely beautiful. Life is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Magical, amazing, people are amazing, and we're being absolutely fucked and completely messed with and hurt so badly that we start doing horrible stuff to each other. Because the thing is, we are doing it to each other. We are each other's jail warden, garden, whatever you want to call it. I mean, we are doing it. We, the soldiers, the police, the doctors, most of us have no idea. But we're doing it because we're being told and we're being informed that this is true and this is not. We all have a responsibility to look in the mirror and say, am I in any way or form being part of this,
right,
this mechanism, this death machine? And I would say many of us are. And so the only thing we have to do is just say, thank you, but no, thank you. I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm still not doing it. And step out. The only, if you have a gearbox of an automatic 350 turbo kind of blah, blah, blah thing like that, the only thing you need to take, just take one little spring, one little screw out of that incredible, magnificent gearbox, and boom, you come to a full stop. This is what we need to do. Do you know, during the occupation, we were talking about that before in Denmark, there were these big Tiger tanks. I mean, super, super deadly, massive, big German tanks that came into the streets of Copenhagen. And somebody found out that if you take a spoonful of sugar and you pour it into the diesel tank of these ones, boom, it would just completely mess up with the engine. So you had these big Tiger tanks.
Oh, hilarious.
One spoonful of sugar, that's all it takes. You don't have to go violent. If you go violent,
that's amazing.
Exactly. For me, it's so symbolic. It's so symbolic. Don't go violent. Don't let the truth do itself, and just stop it by not saying.
I like it. I like that as an analogy or as a symbol of how we're supposed to be. Okay, just two last ones, and then we'll just wrap with the positive tone, if you don't mind. This is just a tiny little thing. Last, we were on a conference call. You did a Sofa Talk conference call basically one time. And I had just watched Everything is a Rich Man's Trick. Yeah. And to me, he had it solved. But I think I asked you a question in the chat, and there's something really big that he was missing or that wasn't right about that picture. And I think it was recent at the time. So I guess I'm just wondering, and you've talked to the assassin now, I'm just wondering if if what your position is on that film now at this point.
I've talked to one of the assassins. There were multiple shooters, shooters. I normally don't talk badly about people. I don't like to normally I don't say anything. You have a very specific question, so I will answer that. I started watching that documentary many years ago. And I thought, oh my God, this is the best thing I've seen ever. It was incredible. It was incredible all the way up until the JFK assassination, which is one of the areas that I've really dedicated my life to find out there. And in that, he suddenly starts talking about Judith Berry Baker, the mistress of Lee Harvey Oswald, as being CIA, and also other parts as being CIA. Also, he points out stuff where I'm like, where on earth did he get that one? Never heard of the guy before. He's never appeared anywhere else. And then suddenly he makes this very high quality production that is absolutely magnificent. When he started doing like that, the way I would strongly say controlled opposition is very often that you can deliver like 95% incredible explosive information, 5% completely wrong, to divert, to pull out the trigger of you know, just like with a hand grenade, that you take out the charge or the spring. So I got scared because, like, whoa, wait a second, that thing you just said there, you just took some of the most important jigsaw pieces of the puzzle, like Judith Berry Baker, who's a dear, close friend to me, myself now, out of the equation. Also, the other one, I can't remember what it was now, was the exact most important part. He just, in a few sentences,
it just was something really critical. That's what I'm, something, and I think, I thought it was the final shooter, but I don't really remember the details.
He just killed them there. And so I got like, whoa, this is dangerous because this is because it's so credible. Anyway, so a year or so later, he contacted me, the guy that made this documentary, and wanted me to help him fund another documentary. And I wrote back to him and I said, I think his name is Francis. I can't remember his name now. Anyway, so he wanted me to raise money for him. And I said, listen, I would be happy to, but I cannot back you because what you're saying there and there is completely wrong. It's just not right, correct. And I was pointing out Jimmy Files, also the shooter behind the picket fence. And then we had the most weird conversation ever, he and I, where he was like, his facts were all over the place and he was accusing me of weird stuff. As like, how can you make a documentary that precise, high quality, and then you don't even have these things straight when we talk to each other like that?
Yes.
I don't trust that documentary.
That's interesting.
At all. Had it been full on, that it continued the way it started, that would have been the masterpiece of all ages. Now I find it very, very dangerous instead. Many of the things that he says are correct.
For me, it was lights going on, whole thing. But then you said, no, there's some rat poison in there, basically.
Yep. And in very specific parts that just completely takes out the parts that are extremely important.
Okay. East Palestine in Ohio. I mean, is there a tie-in there with Palestine? What happened October 7th?
Yeah, I would completely say so. It's like that's how they do it very often, like a year ahead or so. They started with these pointers. And East Palestine is such a specific location. The name of the location, Moscow also. Right. I mean, it's like Texas, Moscow, Idaho. It's not Greenville or something like that. No, it's very specific. And we had the derailing, which was just bizarre because they had made a movie of a derailing in that exact location that was already made. And then it happens in real life. Hello. That mm-hmm. What are the chances there? It's just unbelievable. And so when it happened in East Palestine, I pointed it out in interviews. I say, I don't know what's going on, but please have a look at that. And then we see on what happened on October 7th. And I tell you that one, if you've ever seen a war of propaganda of not one single word being true that is being pumped out, that is it. Because this is not a conflict, an armed conflict. This is not a war. This is genocide. That's it. If you look at it,
yep.
Absolutely.
And ethnic Hamas, cleansing. Ethnic cleansing. Yeah.
Not only ethnic, but it's also a matter about real estate. Get it the out.
Infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah. And get them out. Kill as many as possible. And if you look at also Hamas, if you look into Hamas, which is said to be a Palestinian organization, it's not. It was officially created by Israel. Why would Israel create a thing like that? Why would they fund it? Well, maybe so that they can create conflicts where they control both sides. And the whole thing, I mean, we have, like, Gaza is the world's biggest open-air prison. And then you have Israel, who is one of the most powerful military nations of the world, in many ways, thanks to the U.S., who keeps pumping in 10 million per day or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
And then, so they have surveillance. And the whole area is walled in with a wall that is just unbelievably guarded. And that exact day, suddenly all the guards were moved away. All the cameras were turned off. All of that.
Right.
I mean, and then
they
managed to get out. And then they went on a raid, you know, like shootings like outlaws and stuff like that. Killed 1,000, 1,500 people, whatever you want to think. And then managed to get back in And right when they managed to get back in behind the wall, thank God the guards and the cameras were activated. I mean, that is bullshit on steroids. No,
it's like the Epstein suicide, right? I mean, it's just like, the cameras were just off for 30 minutes. It's just unbelievable. Nobody's committed suicide in that row before, but that's what happened.
I've been contacted by guards, Israeli soldiers and guards in that area that have been working there. They say that if a lizard moves, they see it. They've got movement sensors and orc. I mean, that wall is protected. And here we see that these Palestinian freedom fighters or terrorists or whatever you want to call them, they had like camps that were, they had built like copies of buildings so that they were being able to practice. We're talking about a place where they can hardly get food in and out, where there are no water supplies hardly, where they're being, everything is being controlled. Max Egan, you mentioned Max Egan before. He went into the Gaza Strip. He was there. He couldn't even find nails and screws. He wanted to build furniture for a school. They didn't even have screws or nails. And here we're being told, yes, they have all of these weapons and all of that. It's being supplied by Iran. How did it even get in there?
Yeah.
And then you have like one Apache attack helicopter could have taken out all of these hang gliders and pickup trucks and all within like 32 seconds. And that's it. Game over. Mm. But instead, they were led to do all of these things. As far as that's what we're being told. You see these interviews. I don't trust a single one of them. All of them are, many of them are having what they call duping delight. They're smiling while they're talking about these. Very often you see they're talking into the camera, but they're looking down to the left where the teleprompter is. And very often there's a guy behind them. That's the controller, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying all of these horrible, horrible stuff. Well, they chopped the head of this baby. They did that with a smile. These are the things, when you've seen people that are in shock or people that have lost somebody, it's a completely different experience here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the headlines, how one-sided media has been pumping this out, it's like it's not a matter of that there's a conflict. There's nothing from the Palestinian point of view and everything as Israel being the victim. That is the classical false flag for you. So.
Right. And horrible, I don't mean horrible, to. I know I laughed. I'm not making light of it, but sometimes it's so crazy you have to laugh or cry, basically. I know I feel tuned into that human tragedy, and I would call it ethnic cleansing, definitely.
You're complete. It's a mess. Can I just say one thing? There was a guy who
Yes,
just
please.
checked. There was one of the biggest newspapers in Sweden. Sweden is under psychological war for all kinds of attacks at the moment, really being beaten around. But anyway, so what do you call these things that with the newspapers have where they put the headlines on? What do you call them?
Tabloid? Oh, the actual print? Yeah, I'm not sure what you call
Yeah,
that, but I
but
know what you
you
mean.
know what I mean.
Yes.
That, oh, headlines, breaking news by the newspaper. Okay, so in Sweden, there were on during 2 years, the newspaper Expressen, which is one of the most read newspapers in Sweden, there were 582 of these headlines about Putin in a negative way, and there were zero about Gaza, about what was actually going on. Okay, is that
Wow.
at the same time? So is that some, is there any kind of balance is in the news flow? You know, no, because also the forces are trying to push Sweden into NATO through all kinds of fear-mongering and demonizing of Putin. I don't know who Putin is. I don't know who Donald Trump is. I don't know who these players are. I'm not saying anything about that. I'm saying it's a one single the media outlet flow. You have to be observant and see who's controlling it, who's owning the information, where does it come from, and what does it do to you? What if I believe in this, who benefits? Who benefits from me believing this information? And you will see connected with the operations, and it's right there in your face.
So just in terms of closing, do you know Matthias Desmet by chance? He's Belgian professor, okay, expert in mass psychosis, which is kind of a theme of our talk tonight. But you obviously have managed to keep your vibration very high and upbeat, and you live in a really beautiful natural place. I'm in touch with maybe four of the convoy truckers right now, and they're all really fighting the good fight, and I follow them on Twitter, so I feel in touch with them. And I visited Canada recently. It's just unbelievable the apathy of the population. All the evidence is out there. It's been such an obvious hoax on so many levels, and the tragedies and the manipulation and corruption of the people, quote unquote, in charge. How do you have any vision of how the course correction, how people start to wake up and share the work that you do and share the work that Jason does and insights like that and care about the duping, essentially?
First, let me just comment on the truckers and these caravans and the. Please be aware. I think it's amazing when people act, but please be aware also that you're indirectly, I would suggest, helping to stop the delivery of food, to stop these chains, to block all of these things that we, the normal population, needs. So it's like people who are blocking ports and harbors and roads, and in one way, great. But in another way, we're playing them right in their hand because they want to deconstruct and destroy. And also, right now, there's a food war going on where they're trying to shut these things up. So I would suggest, yes, block some roads, but then get the trucks going even faster and deliver to people as well so that the shops don't go empty and so on. Anyway, that was one part. I live in Bali because we escaped here. I really, for myself, it was we needed to get out because I was sitting doing interviews all the time during lockdown. It was getting very, very unpleasant. I have friends who are in mental institutions and prisons, and I mean, dead. So that was the second time I did a move. I actually three times my childhood boom as an op these part of operation, and the year 2000 from Sweden, I was getting too deep in around the alleged assassination of Olof Palme, and then 2020 from Spain because Spain was getting really too much. So we managed to get out. So, yes, I am in an incredibly beautiful place and I'm super blessed to be here. And indirectly, it was not because I wanted to, but it became a blessing. So the thing is with all of this is that they are trying to get into your mind. They're trying to control you through the mind, because if they can control your mind, they can get you to do whatever. And this is why, Jason, I would love to come back and do more shows like this, because I think also it could be an incredible combo if we start playing ball and I learn from him and he might learn from me and so on.
Excellent.
So the thing is, fear is an interesting thing, because when you think of it, it is only in the mind. It is not a real thing. It is not, you can't go and buy 5 pounds, or you can't say it's blue, it's red, it's square. It's like, it's only in the mind. And my fear is in my head. Your fear is in your head. This is where a lot of the battles should be fought, inside here. Because also the beauty with fear is that it seems real, but it's not. And it's always about things that has not yet happened. So I'm afraid of not what happened yesterday. I'm afraid maybe that it might repeat. But what if, what if, what if? It's all the time the future. Even if you got a gun to your head, it's only when the gun is fired and the bullet enters your head, that's when the problem starts. Until then, it's only what if. Maybe the gun is made of licorice. Maybe it's not loaded. Maybe it's like... So they're trying to keep us in fear mode. Fear is the only tool they have. And when you look at fear, it's like it's pure speculation to something that has not yet happened. And most of us, or many of us, are letting it control our lives. So what a waste of time. What a waste of life. So I would say, if you don't know what else to do, focus on letting go of fear. Letting go of fear. Find different ways you can. Some people like to meditate. Other people like helping elders or animals, or you know, listen to music, hug a tree, hug a cup, whatever works for you to let it go, let it go. And the thing that has really helped me is Raj Yoga, the science of the mind. And my sweetheart Kim and I have had this incredible teacher. Her name is Nalini Chalaram. Nalani, it's spelled N-A-L-A-N-I-E, Nalani Chalaram. I filmed a couple of hundred hours at least with her. It's on YouTube. Also in my newsletter, I talk about all of these things, but I always ended with one of her videos. And it's a 5,000-year-old, not religion, but it's almost like a roadmap of how the mind works. And so it goes through... Raj Yoga goes through so many different situations, how to deal with them, what to do. And so thanks to her and the tools that she has shared so generously with us, we have learned to surf these waves in a way where the mind can still be high and you can still shovel shit down on a street level and transcend this madness, because that's the whole point of it. I think information on its own is nothing. If it's really horrible information that you're spreading, most people want to just kill themselves, you know. But it's like you have to live it. You have to, or you don't have to, but I would suggest, if you know a lot, if you are in this situation, then share it in a way, live in a way that is inspirational to others, because then they will start listening. If they see this is somebody who can actually do it and not just bullshitting, but is actually living it, then, whoa, this sounds interesting. This is, and then people, instead of you saying, go that way, if you walk that way, you work first, they might follow you. They might come after you and start living their truths and becoming more and more free in themselves and more aware, which will inspire other people to become more and more true to themselves. Will be, you know, so it's this beautiful, beautiful thing where it just spreads like that. No organizations, no orders, no, you know, like it's just that's a pure freedom movement of energies. And And if there's nothing else that you can do, then focus as much as you can on gratitude, because that is the thing that lifts your spirit, the frequency up, up, up. The more grateful you are, feel it, really feel it, you know, there's always things for us to be grateful for. That will help you lift. And it's harder and harder for them to get to you if your frequency is high. When you're down on your knees and depressed and anxious and scared, that's when they got you. That's exactly where they want you, with a boot on the top of your head, down in the mud. That's where they can control you. When you're up here and you let more and more see that this is just... it's just an illusion we're up against. Just let it go. And then find your inner truth and then step forward in that. Be brave. It takes courage only when you're scared, you know. But if your heart tells you this is the one you should listen to, not this one, this can really mess with you. The heart, it's a very silent voice, but it will tell you what is right and wrong. The more you quiet this one, the more you listen to this one, it will guide you in the right direction. It will be scary as hell at times, I tell you that, but it's still the right way to do. You know it. You know when it's right, when it's wrong.
I know when it's on. I know when it's on, but when I'm off, I don't know how to get it back. I don't always know how to get it back. but I completely,
it takes practice. It's like surfing a wave. You fall off the board. You know that you're off the board. How do you get back? You get up on the board again and you start standing up. And the better you get at, the better you can surf the waves. It's practice. And so you hopefully get better at it.
Fantastic. That's good, positive close for us, Ole. Thank you for your time.
Life is good. Don't forget that.
I'm happy. I'm really happy you two have landed so nicely on your feet there. And your daughter, I presume, is still there with you too.
Cheers.
So I will. We'll do it by email, but I'll propose to Jason we get back on in the next 2 weeks or so. And I know he's going to be bursting with questions. And he'll also share. I could tell by the way he left. He's going to share you as a resource to his network. So there's going to be more interest in the conversation from that too. Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, I'm here at your service, whatever. Just let's do
it. That's fantastic. That's amazing. Are people still asking for you, or are you kind of off the radar now? Because like, it just seems like, and maybe it's just me that I'm not keeping up fully. I kept up your newsletter, but is there a demand that's flattened out in terms of understanding what's going on? Or okay.
No, I do. I do like 2-3 shows per week.
Okay, that's great.
It's more difficult to move physically. I mean, I'm not fond of airports and checkpoints and these type of things.
Same here.
Otherwise than that, I'm full on.
That's fantastic. Okay, I'm really happy to hear that. Thanks, Ole. It's nice to meet you in person, sort of.
Very
again.
Nice to meet you, Neil.
Absolutely. Great to see you. Say hey to Kim. Okay, yeah, take care. Right on.
Most certainly.
And on March 24th, Thomas Sandifer, CEO of Brown & Williamson, had you fired. And the reason he gave you?
Poor communication skills.
And you wish you hadn't come forward? You wish you hadn't blown the whistle?
Yeah, there are times I wish I hadn't done it. There are times I feel compelled to do it. If you'd ask me, would I do it again? Do I think it's worth it? Yeah, I think it's worth it. Thank you.
Will you be alive? I will be big in your mind. Never let them push you down. There's dead people, so don't care. Always pay.
Push yourself to